From the Lubin Go Studios, it's Sports Talk. Here's your host, Steve Kaplowitz.
I can't stress this enough. Just 1 hour today. 1 hour, 60 minutes of Sports Talk here on a Wednesday afternoon. Great to have you with us. Steve Kaplowitz, Sal Montes from our 600 ESPN El Paso Lubin Go Studios. We normally go live every Wednesday from Speaking Rock, and we're out there on the patio at Speaking Rock, but just an hour today. So for days like this, we have abbreviated shows, and obviously the AAA All-Star Game will preempt our final 2 hours. We are only originating today from the radio station, our Lubin Go Studios here at 4180 North Mesa. So that is how we're getting started today. And with Jay Jaffe joining us for segments 2 and 3, this will be an abbreviated show with the majority focused on baseball like we always do. Jeff Erickson will join us tomorrow. And we've got some other guests coming up as well throughout the remainder of the week, including tomorrow. We'll also get a chance to talk to UTEP soccer coach Kevin Cross on the program for his second youth soccer camp, which will be coming up on Monday. And the World Cup now, we know the champions of the championship will be either France or Croatia. And I feel for Miss Lannister. I do. If you're listening, Claudia, man, oh, man, it's so rough because I'll tell you what, the first half was a terrific half. I thought England should have been up 3-0 instead of 1. They had so many scoring opportunities that they squandered. And then Croatia went nuts in the second half. England was reeling. And when you play not to lose instead of playing to win, this is what happens. So Croatia, congratulations. They beat England 2-1 in extra time to reach the World Cup final. Unbelievable as far as that goes. And I know now some people are saying that you can add Harry Kane to the likes of Tom Brady, LeBron James. That is brilliant athletes whose teams just could not get it done. I mean, we've seen Brady finish runner-up in the Super Bowl a bunch of times. We've seen LeBron a bunch of times also runner-up in the NBA Finals. But Harry Kane was amazing. His team was amazing. They just had an awful second half against Croatia today. And that's about it. And it just goes to show you that in soccer, you have such precious time. I know some people say, well, you got 90 minutes. It's an eternity. I mean, soccer, it takes forever. Plus, you have extra time and stoppage time and all this time. So, really, it's not 90 minutes. It's more like 95 minutes most of the times. But even though you've got 95 minutes of action, hey, when you get an extra one or two scoring chances, you've got to take advantage because you just don't know if you're going to be in a position like that for the final half of your match. So when England had their opportunities, they seized the first one early and took that lead. But man, it really should have been about a 3-0 game at the half. And if that's the case, Croatia would have been done. You could have stuck a fork in them and they would have been finished. But you gave them life. Gave them life and they came back. And 2-1, congratulations. So France and Croatia, I was so much hoping for France and England. The ratings would have been through the roof everywhere around the world, not just, obviously in France and in England, but here in the States, they would have been great. Croatia, France still has a chance to be a great finals, but it could have been so much more had England gone ahead and sealed the deal on this one. So that's unfortunate. Also, everybody talking about the shocker upon shockers, Kevin Anderson. That's right, South African Kevin Anderson, the 8 seed, coming back down 2 sets and beat number 1 Roger Federer to advance to his first Wimbledon semis. That is a big story, folks, in the tennis world. For those of you that follow tennis, you'll understand that Rafael Nadal survived today. It wasn't easy for him, but he was able to still advance. You've got Novak Djokovic going also to the Wimbledon semis, but this could have been such a power-packed group. But Kevin Anderson beats Roger Federer, and that is the big story in the tennis world today. And you don't usually see Federer blow a lead like he did, winning the first set 6-2, the second set 7-6, and then dropping the third set 7-5, the fourth set 6-4, and the final set they went to extras, and 13-11. Anderson outlasted Federer in the fifth and deciding set. You also have the American John Isner. He is also into the, or I'm sorry, John Isner. Is it Isner or Isner? I thought it was.
I think it's Isner.
I think it is Isner. I think. I should know this. Problem is, he hasn't yet, you know, he's good, but he's not along the levels of Federer and Nadal. So, but he's also advancing to the semis. Djokovic needed four sets to get his win over Nishikori. That's easy. I can handle Nishikori, but I'm not. I don't know why I feel like it's John Isner. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is Isner. And then Nadal going up against Del Potro had the first set 1-7-5, dropped the second set 7-6, lost the third set 6-4, so he was also in danger. But he came back to win the fourth and fifth sets 6-4, 6-4 to advance to the finals. So anyway, that's the story as we get yourself going here on the shortened edition of Sports Talk. 880-5763, that is our telephone number to get started on the program today. It is Isner. Oh, I have to trust my first instinct in sometimes. That's just what I have to do. They always say, trust your first instinct because you probably know what you're doing. Anyway, that is, all right, so we do have John Isner.
I thought it was Isner for what it's worth.
Well, nice. I know. It's not E-I, it's I, but anyway, John Isner. So we have an American, and that's important. You know, the Americans advancing is big, and who knows? Maybe Isner can have a chance to play for all the marbles now that Federer's out. Isner's a 9 seed. Anderson's an 8 seed. And then you've got Djokovic, the 12 seed, and Nadal, the 2 seed. That is how things have matched up in Wimbledon. And, again, pretty cool as we are now into the semis. Oh, and also, you know, Serena, a machine, continuing to also advance through. And that is big when you look at, you know, the dominance that we've seen over the years for Serena Williams and just how good she is, too. So Serena, I believe, is now also into the semis with Helena Ostapenko, Angelique Kerber, and Julia Georges. So you've got a pair of Germans, Serena, and then Ostapenko from Latvia into the... You know what the only problem I have right now with American women's tennis? When Serena's done, who's going to take over?
Who's going to take over?
I mean, really? Who is going to... There's nobody right now. There's no great American, young American phenom to she could pass the torch to right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way they'll be able to replace her for sure, but it's tough to even find somebody who could fill just the small percentage of what she's been able to accomplish. Not accomplish, please, but do for the sport, for the women in tennis.
She's 36 years old, and yet she's still as good now as she was in the mid-90s when she first turned pro. She's unbelievable. So, you know, you look at Serena's work ethic, second to none, competitive as heck, and, you know, we sometimes take for granted the Williams sisters and just how dominant they have truly been to the sport of tennis. We've talked zero tennis on this show, by the way, over the last few weeks during Wimbledon, but now it's semifinal time. It's time to, you know, start paying attention. Let's get serious here and see if Serena can win another title. And also, could John Isner break through himself? All right, Jay Jaffe's going to join us in our second segment. Right now, though, let's say hello to our old pal Mark Dyer, who's joining us on line one as we continue here, 12 past the hour. Good to have you on Sports Talk. Mark, how are you today?
Well, it's been a while, Steve. I've been doing good. I just, everybody's kind of been hung up on the Chihuahuas and the soccer, the World Cup, and all this.
Yes.
And I just wanted to throw something in. Everybody remembers Brian Natkin.
Absolutely.
We know him as Natty. I don't know if people found out, but he found himself, or somebody found him. He's now coaching football again. He's at Hutchinson Community College in Hutchinson, Kansas, and he's going to be the offensive line coach and the run offense coordinator.
Oh, very nice. That's good. That's great, actually.
I just hate to see Natty leave El Paso, but, with the new coaching change and everything, you've got to do it all.
Listen, the hardest part right now with that group was they wanted a clean break, and I don't blame them.
Sure,
we saw the exact same thing for basketball, too, after Floyd's group is all gone. And you know what? Sometimes you just got to start over. And you're right. Brian, look, I love Brian. I remember covering Brian as a tight end. He was so good, and he's such a gracious, nice guy and was in a very tough spot as a coach. But then again, I'll say this. I got along well with Sean Coogler when he was an assistant coach here back in the 90s, and I was campaigning and advocating for him to get the job, and it hurt that he couldn't win here because I really believed that Sean was the kind of guy that could turn it around. But unfortunately, even though he played here and was an assistant here and then became a coach, the fans turned on Sean after 3 or 4 years. So, in this town, doesn't really matter if your legacy, if you played here and it's your alma mater, all fans in El Paso care about is just winning football games. That's it.
Well, Steve, the last time I talked to you, or since I've talked to you, we've had a change in the president, athletic director, head football coach, and head basketball coach.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm excited about all four. Now, I don't know about who's going to be our new president, but I'll tell you what, we have got some outstanding individuals, I believe, coming up as our athletic director, football, and basketball coach. It's proof is in the pudding, but I really believe that we made the right step in changing when we did and how we did. I'm really excited about Dimmel's new, it's coming up first. Not to say I'm not excited about Terry, but I'm really excited about Dimmel and see what he's going to put on the gridiron this year. I think it's going to be exciting.
I think so, too. I'm looking forward to watching his son play tight end. I'm sorry, fullback. That's going to be big. I'm looking forward to the new quarterback as well. And just a new system, a change. And there's so much, they've rebuilt what was an athletic department that really had fallen to the bottom. And they've done it in a very short amount of time. So now if the football and men's basketball team can play some entertaining sport and get the fans excited at the Sun Bowl and the Haskins Center again with everything else that Jim has been able to develop as far as the excitement goes for this community, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think UTEP fans are going to get excited again just like you are, Mark.
Well, Steve, it's really great talking to you again, and I can't wait for basketball this year, and can you imagine what's going to happen next year?
Next year is going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to the freshmen this year, but next year is when the fun's really going to start. So.
Well, listen, entertaining as always, Steve. We'll talk to you later. Have a good one.
Always great to hear from you, Mark. Thanks for the call.
600-ESPN-ElPaso.com.
All right, we're feeling all right at 20 past, even though we only have an hour today. That's it. Short show. Tomorrow, the full 3 hours. Chihuahuas are back as well. So we'll look forward to that for you on 600 ESPN El Paso, 7 o'clock, with Tim Haggerty calling the action. But right now, let's jump out to our 600 ESPN El Paso Village Inn hotline, where all of our guests always appear. This man, the author of the Cooperstown Casebook, he'll be heading to Cooperstown soon because, before you know it, we'll be around the Hall of Fame for Major League Baseball. And going to talk a little baseball and beer right now with the great Jay Jaffe, who you can follow on Twitter at @Jay_Jaffe. And Jay, we're never really, I guess, lacking good quality topics to talk about, are we? We've got trade rumors. We've got a meltdown where a guy gets sent to a AAA. We've got phone issues that screwed a team out of a game, apparently. I mean, it's just it never stops, does it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing. You know, there's something every day in the baseball season.
All right, so let's start with the bizarre thing first, might as well. There was a miscommunication yesterday in the Indians game. Terry Francona said that was the cause of the collapse between the Indians and the Reds after a dominant Trevor Bauer performance over 8 scoreless with 12 Ks. The Reds got to Cody Allen and Dan Otero with 2 outs, 1-7-4 on the road. And after the game, apparently Francona said that there was a miscommunication on the phone. He wanted Oliver Perez, OP. It was understood as OT, which is Otero's nickname, and Otero was told to warm up in the bullpen. Now, Jay, I mean, I guess it's an easy mistake, but what did you think that if you've got a bullpen that involves an OP and an OT, you would try to differentiate a little bit between the two?
Yeah, I definitely. I think that's something you'd want to go over. I'm also still amazed that Oliver Perez is around in the major leagues, although he's actually been intermittently, at least, a reasonably good lefty specialist. Now that he's several years removed from his days as an underachieving starter with the Mets. This is chalk this up to one of those things that just happened. It's a regrettable mistake. I can imagine Terry Francona being angry about it at the moment, but having a good laugh about it, down the road, because he's a guy who has been around and seen just about everything.
I appreciate the fact that Francona owns up to this. He seems like a really good guy, and if there's ever a mistake that's made, he's not the kind of guy that's going to either cover it up, lie, or blame somebody else. He's always been one of those stand-up dudes that just, will take the blame.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Francona is a guy who, is a manager who's bound for the Hall of Fame someday. I mean, he is got a top-notch reputation in terms of accountability, and he's able to keep perspective on things, he's the first to admit that this was ultimately his screw up more than anything else. I mean, you'll see a lot of managers who will try to wriggle off the hook in that situation, and thankfully he's not one of them.
Let's talk about Ken Giles of the Houston Astros, the pride of Albuquerque, New Mexico. He was sent down to AAA Fresno today after what happened last night. Allows 3 runs, doesn't record an out. Astros come back to beat Oakland 6-5, but apparently during the moment when A.J. Hinch was pulling Giles from the game, Giles basically told him what Hinch could do with himself, and involved a very popular expletive. So,
oh geez, I missed all of this.
Oh yeah,
I missed all this one. It's the stuff that, like you said, there's so much going on. Sometimes the stuff slips between the cracks. Yeah, you never. I mean, if you're a player, that's a bad place to wind up. And Giles has really, I think, not lived up to the expectations that came with being acquired by the Astros from the Phillies for 5 minor leaguers a couple years ago. He got displaced as the closer in the postseason last year because he was a bit of a mess. And you look at his strikeout and walk numbers; they're great this year. But he's been giving up some hard hit balls, and that wasn't really the time or the place to do what he did or to say what he said. I think the Astros are giving him something to think about now by depriving him of some service time.
Not to mention, Hector Rondon has been practically unhittable this year in Houston. He's got 44 strikeouts in 33 innings. He's given up 6 earned runs. He's got 7 saves and 3 holds. And whether it's Davinsky or Rondon, A.J. Hinch has really good options right now at the closer spot.
I mean, the Astros have worked hard to build out their bullpen depth, and Giles has been the weak link. You got to remember, in this day and age, the guy who's getting the saves isn't the bulk of the saves isn't necessarily the most important man in the bullpen anymore. And the Astros have shown a lot of flexibility, a lot of creativity, and in how they run their bullpen, and I think they'll be fine for this. I wonder if Giles is a guy who's now living on borrowed time in Houston.
Probably so. I wouldn't be surprised if what they do with him, we'll end up seeing. But, you know, the Astros have some pretty good alternatives. We're talking baseball right now with Jay Jaffe as we continue here on Sports Talk. We haven't heard yet the results of the MRI for Garrett Richards of the Angels, but this is a bad situation that just got worse. Their whole rotation's been getting killed by injuries all year long. Richards is a guy that at least looked like a tradable commodity should the Angels decide to shop, and now all of a sudden, you know, he might finally need Tommy John surgery after leaving yesterday's game with forearm irritation in the third inning.
Yeah, that's just a bummer. I mean, the Angels have had some success in terms of alternative treatments to Tommy John surgery. They've been able to put it off for Richards, for a couple of years, but he's found other ways to get hurt anyway, and it's just a shame because the guy is. Certainly one of their best pitchers. I don't think he's their best pitcher anymore. You know, when Ohtani's healthy, at least he probably qualifies in that regard. But it's been, unfortunately, I think one bad thing after another for the Angels after a very promising start to the season. They're now fourth in the NL West. I mean, the AL West, just two games above 500, and this isn't going to make it any easier losing Richards for any amount of time.
Noah Syndergaard is going to start for the Mets on Friday against Washington. He was the subject of your latest story at Fangraphs.com, where you wrote about the prospect of a trade looming over Noah Syndergaard. I know it seems insane that we've discussed this multiple times with you regarding Syndergaard and DeGrom, and you've talked about how you just could never see the Mets trading, especially to the Yankees, or really, you know, trading away your two big guys that are your best pitchers, but it's crazy enough, Jay, that it's looking more and more like the Mets are going to possibly move one of these, and it very well could be Thor.
Yeah, I think we're getting really mixed signals. I don't think they really want to make a trade, and I can understand not wanting to. I also think, you know, the more I think about it, while I do believe there's some merit to the idea that the Mets need to rebuild, particularly when you look around. That rotation is great, and that rotation I think will keep you in contention if you've got a half decent lineup. I just don't think they have a half decent lineup. I don't think you could trust them to spend money in free agency. If you look at the ways that they've spent it the last couple of winters, obviously, you know, Yoenis Cespedes generated a lot of excitement in 2015 and 2016, but he's been an injury prone mess since then. Jay Bruce was a horrible idea from the get go. Todd Frazier, I think, okay, but some of their other moves just haven't panned out. And they've done a poor job of developing from within. Guys like Ahmed Rosario and Dominic Smith are losing time to, the guys who belong in the baseball's version of a hospice, Adrian Gonzalez, Jose Reyes, more than that. And it's taken injuries to Cespedes and Bruce just to get Brandon Nimmo and Michael Conforto in the same lineup. And unfortunately, Conforto isn't even all that healthy. So... I'm on board with the idea that a trade needs to happen, but when you look, you know, the Sandy Alderson having just taken a leave of absence due to his recurrence of his cancer, I think they really need a fresh mind from outside the organization. I think you wait till this winter, you hire a new GM, somebody who comes in with a vision, and let him make the decision, or let him, you know, drive the decision that's going to be made with ownership as to whether you blow this up or keep it together. Because I think it's time for some new minds in there. This whatever they've got in there, it's not working. It's part of it's certainly the fault of ownership. Part of it's the fault of Sandy Alderson and his staff. But things have to change.
Here's the weird thing. DeGrom's been magnificent. When Syndergaard's healthy, he's top-notch. Steven Matz has pitched well this year. And Zach Wheeler has shown some signs. So, really, the young guys have done their job. Jason Vargas has been a total train wreck. And then
I forgot him.
And when you look at them offensively, their best hitter this year is Asdrubal Cabrera, which, really, I mean, it's not to say that Asdrubal's not a bad ball player. He's always been a good hitter, but he's a 32-year-old that is kind of more of a placeholder than anything else for the Mets. So it is a weird spot for them offensively right now, and they don't really have a ton of great bats in the farm system other than a first base prospect who might be taking Dominic Smith's place soon. And I'm forgetting his name.
Peter Alonso.
There you go.
Yeah.
Peter Alonso. But other than that, it's not pretty right now if you're a Met fan.
Yeah, no, they're scoring less than four runs a game. I mean, and any time you fall below that line, it's not a good place to be. And Asdrubal Cabrera got off to a very hot start. He's kind of cooled off a bit. He's not a very good defender. You look at the defensive metrics on him are, you know, double-digit runs below average in the field. So he's not really doing your pitching staff any favors either. He's a guy I think they have to trade to try to get some improvement on both sides of the ball. This is just not a very, very good team, and the infield always had this feel of makeshiftness about it, and I think that's really part of the problem.
Question just came in on Twitter from Michael Olivas at MOlivas37J. He wants to know if the Dodgers are in the running for any big names before the trade deadline, and I guess that could be a perfect segue into the Manny Machado sweepstakes.
Yeah, we've heard that the Dodgers are one of the teams that seem to be very interested in Manny Machado. They lost Corey Seager for the season earlier this year. They don't have a shortstop. They've been getting by at short with Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez at shortstop. They don't really have a full-time solution there. Both of those guys can also play elsewhere in the outfield and infield. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I know that the prospect that's been connected to the possibility of a deal is a guy named Garrett Lux, who I believe was their first round pick in 2016, who's currently at High A Rancho Cucamonga and tearing up the league, but probably somebody who I think they could afford to lose in a deal if they had to. That said, you know, there are other teams that are competing for Machado's services as well, and I think the Dodgers probably have their eyes on the bullpen as another area that needs an upgrade. They're going to have a surplus of starters, so they might be able to move somebody down there to help out, maybe Alex Wood or something like that. But I think that they are going to be a team that is fairly active at the deadline.
They also have a few extra outfielders. I know Puig just went on the DL, but you've got a guy like Andrew Tolles who easily could be packaged in a deal with his production and being major league ready. Although I know they're not going to want to trade Walker Buehler, and they're not going to want to trade really any of their core prospects because they're looking at a rental here. How important is a guy like Machado to the Milwaukee Brewers trying to hold off the Chicago Cubs?
Yeah, boy, I think he could be a real difference maker in that division. Obviously the comparison that gets drawn a lot is, you know, with the Brewers. You think back to CeCe Sabathia and what that meant when they got him in 2008. Obviously Machado's a position player rather than a pitcher, but, you know, to see the Brewers being aggressive in a situation like this, their shortstop Orlando Arcia, that has been set down a couple times. He's 23 years old and a great glove man, but a guy who's hitting 190 for a 197 average and a 251 slugging percentage, which just isn't getting it done. They've got Travis Shaw, who's done a good job at third base, but they need a shortstop anyway. And they've got a surplus in their outfield that they can afford to break up. Brett Phillips is a name that you hear a lot, and in connection, I'm sure they've got some other prospects would want. So I would look for them to be a serious challenger in this, but they also need pitching. So it's not clear whether they've got enough will to get both big deals done.
Jay Jaffe giving us some time here on Sports Talk as we continue. Another story you wrote about a few days ago, the starting National League outfield for the All-Star game. And you wrote, I think I love this NL All-Star outfield. And it is pretty crazy. Bryce Harper having a down season, Matt Kemp having a great resurgence season, and Nick Markakis coming out of nowhere to not only putting together a great year in Atlanta, but getting a starting spot in the All-Star game. It made me wonder, Did Nick Markakis, when he was young in Baltimore, ever get a starting spot in the AL outfield in an All-Star game?
No, he's a first-time All-Star. Yep, he's 34 years old and the first-time All-Star. And, yep. You know, he got jobbed out of a spot. I think it's 2008. He had a great first half and I looked into it, somehow didn't make the team. I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly what the circumstances were that year, but this is a guy who's toiled forever, and really, you know, he's never received an MVP vote. He's never been, you know, terribly distinctive, and really the last few years with the Braves has been, you know, felt more like a placeholder, a guy who's durable but not necessarily playing at full health due to some neck problems. He's got a couple Gold Gloves. I was trying to remember that here. Yeah. This is a neat story that he's getting there the first time. And I thought, you know, this outfield, the unlikelihood of it, just to me felt very. Very much like something I wanted to write about. I think you could make a case for a lot of guys starting there. I think Lorenzo Cain at the Brewers is probably, you know, if you're talking about the merits of this year's play and even, you know, going back to last year, because I think of the All-Stars as being, you know, one good argument is just, are they legitimately the best player in the league at this position, not just for the last 80 games, but say for the last year and a half, you know, demonstrating this kind of staying power. Cain might be a better choice there, but just the directions that these guys came into these spots to me was fascinating and worth writing about.
Jay, let's talk about one more player that kind of fits into the Nick Markakis category, and that's Sin-Soo Choo, who quietly over the last month and a half or so has put together one of the better streaks we've seen in baseball, and yet here's a guy that probably was considered during his peak years to be better than Markakis, yet still far from a perennial all-star year after year, and yet at 35, staying healthy, doing some pretty remarkable things with the Rangers.
Yeah, Choo's 35-year-old first-time All-Star, and he's never even won a Gold Glove. So, he is riding what's now a 48-game consecutive game on-base streak, getting on base via a hit, a walk, or a hit by pitch. He's taken it into his final plate appearance a few times, needing that last on-base streak to keep the streak going. What's fascinating about it is, you know, we've learned so much about baseball particularly over the last quarter century in terms of the value of on-base percentage, but nobody ever talks about this kind of streak. It's Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio own the top three streaks of all time. I think Williams, if I remember correctly, is at 84, and the other two are at 73, including DiMaggio the same year. That he got the 56-game hitting streak that we all know so well. The fourth-ranked streak is Orlando Cabrera from 2006, which is a bit of a surprise because Cabrera wasn't necessarily an on-base guy. But Choo has what's now tied for the second-longest streak since Cabrera, tied with Joey Votto. And I think that's pretty cool. I mean, he's been healthy this year, which runs counter to a lot of what's happened the last couple of years. Two years ago, he played just 48 games. Last year, he was pretty mediocre, even though he was available for 149 games. Just hasn't quite lived up to that contract that the Rangers signed him to. But this year, he's having a great year. Unfortunately for the Rangers, it's happening at a time when there's really not a hell of a lot else going on that's particularly positive. So. It's impressive what he's doing nonetheless.
The highlight for the Rangers might be the package they get back from Cole Hamels.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's wrap it up. Your beer pick of the week. What would you like to focus on for our listeners
This one's a bit of a story here. When I was en route to Denver, I got to stumble into one of the great breweries in this country. That's Trillium in Boston. I was out on Cape Cod for 10 days and then I had to take a drive to Provincetown, take a ferry to Boston, walk with my luggage, roll my luggage to the subway station to get a bus to the airport, and then fly, and then take a train. So I'm doing this, and I have a tip to check out Trillium because it's a brewery I've been hearing plenty about over the years. It's one of those places where. You know, they just make the kind of beers that are so coveted you just can't get your hands on them unless you know somebody. So they are over by the piers, though, and I went in there on a, I guess this was a Thursday morning, and they happened to have a lot of cans in stock, and I was able to walk out of there with four different varieties of two cans apiece, including this double IPA called Permutation Number 48, which was a mosaic fueled double IPA in the New England style, kind of the hazy, fruity style, and it was just delightful. One of the best beers I've ever had. One of those ones, if you're ever lucky to get your hands on anything from Trillium, it's probably worth trying. This one was about 9.5% ABV, not one you're gonna drink more than one of, but just a sheer delight to have.
Does Trillium get this probably not much farther out of Massachusetts, correct? Or
not much further out of Massachusetts, really. I mean, it doesn't even make it down to New York here.
Okay.
You know, it's one of those ones where, you know, hopefully you've got somebody who you can trade beers with if you're into that sort of thing. And you know, it was one of those white whales of mine to get some of their IPAs, and finally got to do it.
I understand. All right, Jay, good job as always. Appreciate the time. It's 7-Eleven, so get yourself a Slurpee before the deal is over. And we'll look forward to having you back on the show here again next Wednesday.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks.
All right, we've got about five or so to go before we end this 2 hours early and get you out to Columbus, site of the AAA All-Star Game, which you'll have a chance to enjoy on 600 ESPN El Paso. We'll be back tomorrow. Jeff Erickson will join us. Kevin Cross will join us as well. We'll be busy. And then Cody Decker will be with us either Thursday or Friday on the show, as he'll be back in town beginning tomorrow for El Paso and the Reno Aces, opening up a four-game post-All-Star break homestand here at Southwest University Park. So, you know, Cody is one of those people that has a standing invite with us whenever he wants. So I've always told Cody, you say the word and let me know when you want to come back, and we'll have you on the show. So Cody Decker is once again, you know, in AAA for the Diamondbacks. And truth is, whenever Cody plays, he hits. Whenever, and you just give him regular playing time and he's going to produce. And unfortunately for Cody, that playing time has kind of come to a sudden and sporadic end about a month ago when he was put on the DL. And since then, he's had mostly pinch hitting appearances. He's had a hard time breaking into the lineup in Reno, which is tough because when you've essentially put together a good first half and you know that if you play, you can produce, but you're just not playing, it'll drive you nuts. So I look at it as another way. He's got more time for us, so it's perfect. I mean, we'll give, right? You know, that's exactly. But, you know, everybody's loss on the field is our gain because it just means we get a little more Cody Decker on the show while before a game.
That's so tough. It's so tough to get back into the groove, especially when you're going into pinch hit. I mean, you're called on and expected to hit when, you know, I don't want to say rusty, but you may have lost your groove at that point. You don't have that consistent feel for the game, so you know, hey, he has more time for us.
That's, you know,
give
what?
Us a call, please.
That's right. It's like, great, Cody, you want to come on the show? You betcha. You just let us know when, and we'll make that happen. So I'm trying to see right now. Let me take a quick look at the starting lineup for the PCL All Stars and see if we have any Chihuahuas in the lineup to begin. And
yeah,
we do. Luis Urias is leading off.
He's leading off,
playing short.
I love
that.
It
is very cool. So, former Chihuahua Christian Bethencourt is catching, batting fifth, which is also kind of fun as we look at, you know, how the lineups will stack up for these teams. And then, do we know the starting pitchers?
Yes, Sal. Dakota Hudson, and I believe he's with Memphis.
Yes, he is.
And also Cole Irvin, and let me see, he might be from the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
Dakota Hudson has been awesome.
Fire.
I mean, you want to look at a guy that's been mowing them down. And Dakota is a former first-round pick. But so far this season, 12-2, 2.42 ERA and getting it done in every capacity. He'll be in St. Louis soon. He really will. So Dakota Hudson, the former number one pick from 2016, getting the start. So that's perfect. So we'll have it for you coming up in 5 minutes. It is the AAA All-Star Game. Chihuahua Luis Urias leading off, playing short. All the action coming up next right here on 600. Your home for El Paso Chihuahuas baseball. It's ESPN El Paso.
Hey, everybody, this is Sal from Sports Talk, and you've been listening to the Sports Talk podcast from 600 ESPN El Paso. Tune in on weekdays from 4 to 7 to catch the show live, and also keep up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at 600 ESPN El Paso. And visit the 600ESPNElPaso.com website for the latest in sports with blogs, pictures, videos, contests, and more.